As such, if one violates these laws, he becomes sinful. The conclusion is that unrestricted sense enjoyment means sinful activities. Illicit sex is sex that violates the laws given in the scriptures. When one violates the laws of the scriptures or the Vedas, he commits sinful activities. One who is engaged in sinful activities cannot change his consciousness. Our real function is to change our consciousness from Kashmala, sinful consciousness, to Krishna, the supreme pure. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavanam. Krishna is the supreme pure, and if we change our consciousness from material enjoyment to Krishna, we become purified. This is the process recommended by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the process of Jeta Dharpana Marjanam, cleansing the mirror of the heart. Polygamy. In this commune, we do not practice polygamy. Just to clarify that point, the tapering, so it has to be specifically mentioned. Do not practice polygamy because Kalo Sutra Sambhava, you give the living entity in the age of Kali an inch, they will take a mile. So because there is an explicit nature, in the material world, particularly in Kali Yuga, we would do well to just take care of and protect one wife than to foolishly, lustfully, disturb the lives of many other devotees and entities. So let's make sure that is said clearly and unambiguously. However, the understanding of polygamy is actually something that can be discussed by some more senior than I. But Krishna himself had 16,108 wives. We know the story that precedes that was that these young ladies were kidnapped by Narakasura. Yes, very good. Kidnapped by Narakasura. Krishna delivered them. Now, of course, in Vedic times, if a woman spent time in another man's house and kidnapped and was sexually abused and assaulted by another, no one would then provide shelter for that lady. So Krishna can provide shelter. Krishna can provide shelter for all living entities. We see when he married 16,108 wives, he gave each of them a palace. He took care of them, gave them the sons that they wanted, and made sure they were protected. If we cannot protect one person, let's leave the others alone. Two points are mentioned, which I'd like to share realizations on in this particular verse. It comes in the first sentence of the purport. Prabhupada says, reading from Srila Govinda Das Thakur, in this verse, Srila Govinda Das actually says that there is no bliss in the enjoyment of youthful life. Sometimes it's just a matter of semantics, words. We cannot buy happiness. That's a common phrase we often use. We cannot buy, money does not buy happiness. No, it does not. However, money does buy gratification. By defining gratification according to this particular purport, as you're about to give, I'm sure many of you are about the Shastras, thanks to Krishna's Marma. To enjoy, the modern scientific method or advancement of scientific civilization encourages the enjoyment of these five senses. The sense objects are form, taste, smell, touch, and sound. So by gratifying the five senses, by pursuing the objects of the senses, we can experience a measure of gratification. But the problem is, by misunderstanding that sensual gratification to be happiness, it comes with two problems. One, such gratification is temporary, and it brings all kinds of distress. If my gratification, my so-called happiness, relies upon the quality of my senses, I can buy gratification. Right? If you have a lot of money, you can see see more of the different sides of the world. You can spend more time gratifying the senses. So money does buy gratification. Let's use words carefully here. So gratification can be bought by money, but along with that comes the temporary nature of that gratification. It's based on, that gratification is based on things outside of us. If we go to watch a movie and electricity goes off, there goes our gratification. Electricity, those of us who experience it in India, is not always something that's there 24 hours a day in some situations. So if something happens, electricity goes off, we cannot watch the movie we're looking at. So then what happens? Gratification is over. You want to go to a particular place to experience something. If we're in a traffic jam, gratification is cut. There's no longer experience, the so-called happens. So gratification is temporary and it's based on things outside of our control. That's the nature of gratification. Based on the acuity of our senses and on issues outside of our control. Now, if we switch, let's talk about happiness. Happiness is, comes from within. Ananda Maya Vyasa, the spirit soul, is the embodiment of happiness. It is the very qualification, the very nature of the soul is to experience bliss. So it comes from within. Krishna consciousness is already within the heart, has to be awakened by it. It's already there. That's happiness. Another thing is, it's eternal. Because we are the embodiment of happiness, it is the very quality of the soul. We have no, there's no connection with our senses. It's eternal, and it's not based on sensual heat. So it goes on unending. Our relationship with Krishna brings, it is years before Krishna lost that relationship, brings us the ability to experience unending happiness that is beyond the acuity of our senses and that is not reliant upon external considerations of ourselves. That's the difference between happiness and gratification. Money does buy gratification. The problem with gratification, Krishna says in the second chapter, winter and summer seasons. Based on the acuity of our senses and on issues outside of our control, that's gratification. Happiness has nothing to do with the acuity of our senses and is not outside of our control. We carry the seed for bhakti within us. We just have to grow it and awaken it. The second point, this is important to understand, is Prabhupada talks about sinful activities. Sometimes we, what time am I at tonight? Sinful activities. Sometimes we think sinful activities to be murder, drinking, very, very gross forms of sinful activity. Sinful activities, atmaha. Atmaha is killing the soul. Violence to the soul. To kill the soul means to do any activity that causes the soul to take rebirth. That is violence to the soul. That is sinful activity. Any activity that causes the soul to go back into samsara, that's a sinful activity. Charity, by the strictest definition, is it a sinful activity or not? Depends. Very good. We know charity, the 18th chapter, falls in three modes of nature. Charity, the word of passion and ignorance. Absolutely. Because it causes us to go back into samsara. Charity, the word of goodness. Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, charity, penance, these things should not be given because they purify the human race. Charity, the word of goodness. Is that charity just given to a proper person without expectation of return? That kind of charity, giving prasadam to another person, that does not cause reaction. So when you give prasadam to another person, it's elevating that person, as we go from the Nectar Devotion, the six characters of devotional service, one is all auspicious. By giving prasadam to another living entity, that living entity is elevated. comes closer to Krishna. But us helping others come closer to Krishna, we come closer to Krishna. There is no servant more dear to me than a person who helps others come closer to me. 18th chapter, final 68, 69. So by offering prasadam, you giving Krishna consciousness to others, offering prasadam, having others appreciate Krishna, that is true charity. Because it elevates the other living entity, and it elevates ourselves. It brings us out of samsara. So it depends, as we correctly said, on the type of charity. It doesn't mean that the devotee is hard-hearted and not compassionate. We see someone suffering, someone's laying in the street, arm chopped off, bleeding over them, and we walk past them, oh, it's the material body, don't worry about it. Someone will take care of it. No, the devotee is very compassionate. But we're also compassionate to the soul. So coming back to sinful activities, any activity that gives karma is a sinful activity. Because in order to live out the consequences of that karma, we have to take the material body. The cause of the material body is karma. We have this particular body due to past karma. So any activity that causes karma means it causes another body, which means it causes birth, death, and we're back into samsara. So any activity, in the strictest definition, is a sinful activity because it causes violence to the soul. There's a story of a man, Michael. Michael went on a trip to Antarctica, thinking he was going to go there and have a good time. He ended up in Antarctica. He reached there, the weather was terrible. Obviously, it's the South Pole. Freezing weather. The other persons who were part of his group were either lost, died along the way. He was all alone in Antarctica, struggling, had no idea how to survive on the frozen continent. Nothing to eat day after day. Nighttime, practically froze to death from the storms of the winter. Could barely find shelter. He came upon a previous encampment of some other persons who were there before him. He found some matches. So he was able to light a little small fire, and he would melt some ice and drink a little water. But he was getting more and more malnourished, day after day, week after week, month after month. He's husbanding his matches, trying to stay warm. At some point he found a potato left over from a previous adventure. He had his potato, now cut his potato in 1/16, 1/16 a day to try to save it for as long as he possibly could. Chew it 150 times. This is all the nourishment he had for so long. He came across another adventurer, John. John was in the worst situation he was. At least Michael had a little something. He had a few matches. He was eating 1/16 of a potato every 4 weeks. So he had a little something, some energy was in the body. John was completely on the verge of death. So Michael, out of his charity, potato he was saving for months, cut it in half, gave him the whole half of the potato. And then John went on his way, Michael went on his way to try to survive. Years passed now, but somehow Michael survived. After so many years of this, Michael was stumbling along, and he heard someone calling him from behind. He turned around and he saw huge cargo of icebreaker ships coming into shore, and a captain on the bullhorn. Hey, what are you doing? Come, come to save you, come to rescue you. Come back, what are you doing? Michael was overjoyed. pulls my gun to the ship, sail back to America. Comes back to America, is reunited with that family. Comes from a rich family, by the way. Reunited with his family and friends, he's on the beach of Los Angeles enjoying it. Very well satisfied. And he gets a call from John, who, by the way, is still in America. How he found the cell phone to call, I have no idea. That's beside it. John calls Michael. Michael is in California, happily enjoying on the shores of Venice Beach. And John says, "Michael, Michael, you were so wonderful when you were here in an article with me. I remember so many years ago you gave me that half of a potato. I am so very thankful. But you know what I found? I found a whole sack of potatoes. So I can actually, if you come back to Antarctica, I can give you your half of the potato." Naturally, Michael was not at all inclined to go back to that particular situation. That is charity. When we give, this half of the potato is something that's very valuable when you're in Antarctica. Giving someone $1 million in Chicago is a very valuable thing. But in Global Vrindavan, $1 million is a half of a rotten potato. It has no value. So when we give a charity in that manner, what charity does is, even though it's a wonderful thing, we have to go back into the material world, take another body in order to receive this half of potato. That's why every charitable act, if not based in Krishna consciousness, if it brings you back into the material world, if it brings us back to Antarctica, it's not a very intelligent activity. It's best to give the potato and keep the potato. Or better yet, come with me on the boat of Krishna consciousness and let's sail back to Goloka Vrindavan. That's the boat of Krishna consciousness. The captain is a spiritual master. So acts of charity, sinful activities, are activities that keep us in samsara. As devotees, it does not mean that we negate compassion. Devotees are most compassionate. But we see on two levels. The primary level is, how do we save a person's soul? Ask them to chant Hare Krishna. If they cannot chant Hare Krishna because they have a toothache, then we take them to the doctor, fix their tooth, and then tell them to chant Hare Krishna. We do not send them to the dentist for the sake of sending them to the dentist. The devotee recognizes that living in the material world cannot chant Hare Krishna because they have toothaches. They are suffering in so many different ways. So we try to address it to the best of our ability, but the purpose is to give them Krishna consciousness, is to get them on the boat. At one point, I was a soccer coach, and in order to get my certification, I had to learn CPR. This was not part of my training, because I wasn't dealing with soccer there on land, not on water. But it was talked about in one of the classes how when you save a drowning person, sometimes you may have to hit them, because they're struggling, flailing, and they're causing damage to themselves, and they can drown the lifeguard. In order to save a living entity, I'm not saying you should wear a siren cap. In order to save a living entity, in order to save others and ourselves, we have to see what is the best possible way to save the soul. All activities in Krishna consciousness are based on whether or not it pulls a person out of samsara. If it does not pull that soul out of samsara, we do not do it. Any activity that throws a soul back into samsara is a sinful activity, which is so good or bad. If it puts a living entity back into samsara, it is a sinful activity. Because it is violent to that person's soul.
This can all be lived through varnasha. We talk about gratification and happiness. We talk about how to help others and ourselves. Dhyani varnasha is a process of healing. We know varnasha is social groups and quarters of life. Dhyani is deva.
For to give anything for Lord Krishna to eat. They were the perfect example of varnasha. But because there is not an understanding of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they missed an opportunity to serve and have a relationship with Krishna. The gopis, on the other hand, they understood the ultimate aim of life, and that is
aham daso smi, I am a servant of the Lord. So it is a process of Daivi Varnashram, beginning with our inclination, our abilities, our social situation in life, and then using that in the service of Krishna,
where we can move from gratification
to spiritual happiness. It's where we can move from sinful activities,
or activities that keep us in samsara, to activities that liberate us from samsara. That is the purpose of Dhyani Varnashram. It switches us from one path to the other. By being engaged in such a manner is critically important. We're talking, what's your name? Local name? Where do we begin? We begin by understanding varnasha. The problem is in this day and age, there is varnashanka, there is not varnasha.
Even without the understanding, the process of varnashram is absolutely powerful. We come back to the human form of life to try again. Arjuna asks this question: what happens if a person does not become pure in this life in their practice of devotional service? At the same time, they've not developed in a varnashram sense, they've not developed their karma, they do not have a proper material development as well. What happens to such a person? Krishna says, that's okay. They're given the opportunity to do it again, to try again, and again, and again. So I'm not saying varnashram is the all in all. What I'm saying is that we have Krishna consciousness, and we can use varnashram to help situate us properly so that we can properly, stably continue to practice Krishna consciousness. When we are unstable in our lives, it becomes very, very difficult to, over 20, 30, 40 years, practice varnashram, practice Krishna consciousness. When our ashram is not settled, when we are, our career is not settled, we're jumping from this career to that career, we're trying to arrange our life accordingly. It becomes very, very difficult to practice Krishna consciousness in a dedicated, stable manner. Varnashram is a tool to allow that to happen. It facilitates the practice of sadhana bhakti. Unfortunately, in the material postmodern era, varnashram is not, well, it's almost non-existent. It is non-existent as a process of spiritual elevation. Devotees who come from India have a little more of that background because India comes from the Vedic, that varnashram culture. So they have strong families with fathers, grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents, and generations they have that stability over decades and even centuries in their families. So children born in such families, they have a heads up. They have an advantage in taking to Krishna consciousness because at least their social situation is for the most part stable. Prabhupada commonly, in the last several years of his life, talked about Varnashram. And it behooves the managers of the society to help. That is what, when I first got involved in management, by not because I had any qualifications, but because there was no one else available and I just happened to be a living body in the situation. It was in the mid-90s in the Maya Gurukul, and the Gurukul went through a whole, everyone knows ISKCON history, so we won't go into the details. But the Gurukul went through a whole change of management and so on, and it was basically emptied out. And there were a few teachers, managers left, more than two-thirds of the teachers left. I happened to be the only one there who was in my early 20s. I was the only one there who knew. I was the most senior person there in terms of the length of time I'd been around. There were far more qualified people there. A lot of the Western teachers were new to India, so they did not know how to deal, and so on and so forth. Long story short, I was given the responsibility as acting principal until the new principal came from Australia. Hari Kesh Maharaj said one thing. He said, your responsibility, he was the GBC, the co-GBC of Mayapur at the time. He said, your responsibility is to make sure everyone is happily engaged in Krishna's service. Those two things, happily, satisfied, content, but also engaged in Krishna's service. You have one way without the other and you fail as a manager. And that single instruction carries to this day. As managers, is to help devotees, give them a place where they can, in an environment that is conducive for them to, in a stable manner, they can practice and observe their Krishna conscious vows and activities. That's the duty of the Kshatriya means to protect. What are we protecting? Not the body. Hiranyakashipu did not come to protect Prahlad's body. Lord Nrisingadev came to protect the promise of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj says, the Lord is in that pillar. Lord Nrisingadev came to prove Prahlad correct. Lord Nrisingadev did not have to appear because Hiranyakashipu was acting like a moron. That was taken care of without Lord Nrisingadev appearing. Right? Nothing happened to Prahlad, even though Hiranyakashipu was trying to kill him. Going back to the point, Daivi Varnashram. And we read the translations, and I will end in a few minutes. We read the translations, and it talks about the attachment. We're talking about, yes, that's what it was, attachments. Attachment to sense gratification and the sense objects. And in these chapters, we'll see it talks a lot about the attraction to women. And women, you're not off the hook. Attraction to men as well. We're all in this boat together. Attraction to the opposite sex. An attachment is an idea that these sense objects are the source of my happiness. An attachment is an idea. That's all it is. Is it a strong idea that I need this thing in order to be happy, and mistaking that gratification for happiness. That's an attachment. Detachment is recognizing its gratification. My happiness is over here coming from Brahmasukha, from my relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We will see in these chapters it talks a lot about impure sex life. And it's very important because, again, coming to Varnashram, that allows for the Varnashram system, allows for the proper interaction between male and female. The men are to see the women as mothers and to offer protection. Again, ladies are not off the hook. The women have to offer protection to the men. Men need protection. We have to see the ladies as mother. This comes in the Varnashram understanding. Otherwise, what happens is attack by Chandavega on the city of Paranjana. These attachments come, and we see the opposite sex, the men see the women as sense objects, and the women see the men as sense objects. The Varnashram understanding, because we're not fully pure, because we're not on the level of seeing all living entities in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision. Until we're seeing with equal vision, we have to see according to the Varnashram understanding. We practice the Varnashram principles at the same time while we practice our sadhana. Behave according to the Varnashram system, and we practice our sadhana at the same time to purify. So we come to, we see all living entities as parts and parcels of Krishna. Until we have that vision, we behave according to the Varnashram construct. And that means we see all women as mother. I know particularly in the United States, it's become I believe it's a GBC resolution where we call everyone as Prabhu. And because we are followers of Prabhupada and this comes GBC, that's what we do. We call everyone Prabhu as seniors. However, and this is my personal opinion, those of you who come from India, we know the language has masculine, general, and masculine, feminine, and neuter. In Spanish, we have that also. To call a lady Prabhu is grammatically wrong. It's just grammatically wrong. It's not a question of philosophy. It's grammatically incorrect. But what's more sad, rather than, and I understand why in ISKCON we call everyone Prabhu, is because by not doing so, sometimes people become upset by being mistreated. There's an abuse by calling one person Prabhu, one person this or that. So best call everyone Prabhu and let's get on with Krishna consciousness. That's why that instruction is there. So we follow the instructions of our acharyas. We follow the instructions of our present acharyas at GBC. That is absolutely critically important to understand. But just on a sidebar, to explain this particular point of Varnashram and how it's important to behave according to Varnashram principles, is that now it is unfortunate that the term mata or mataji it's a four-letter word. It's a derogatory. It's come to the point where calling a lady mata is an insult. When calling Atma Mata Guru Patni, Brahmani Raja Patniki, the mother is the highest position in the social order. It is a privilege to have a mother. Trust me, I know. It is a privilege to have a mother who encourages us in Krishna consciousness. Mothers are critically important. We have to understand. Just give it to the Matajis. And it becomes a derogatory, an insulting turn of phrase. That is so, so unfortunate. By seeing, behaving towards ladies as mother, we get, and as Vaishnavis, but as mothers, because we're not on a level of Narada Muni, we behave according to proper etiquette. We get the protection of mother. We have to protect our parents. We have to protect our mothers, absolutely. By giving them respect of the mother, by recognizing they have so much, have sacrificed so much for their own children and for society at large, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world, is absolutely true. We know this from the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna's argument, one of Arjuna's four arguments, you're all bhakti, many of your bhakti shastris here, one of the four arguments was a degradation of human society because all the men do not protect the women. The women are abused, and what happens? The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. The following children, we see it out there on the street. It is absolutely critical that we put the mothers on the, give them the esteem that not only they deserve, but it's for our own benefit. And the ladies, it's for you to protect us. Men are men. Men need protection. We see in the story of... Actually, I think there's a nice... It's almost 8:30. I'll read a little bit. I don't know if I can find it in 2 minutes. But in this section of the Bhagavatam, it talks about the ability of the woman to protect the men. The wife is to protect the husband. We need that protection. I will end there because I'm really getting warmed up here, but it's time to wrap this up. In summary, attachments. An attachment is a belief. It is the belief in that our sense objects are the source of our happiness. Sense objects are not. Sense objects are the source of gratification. What's the problem with gratification? Gratification is temporary because it's based on the senses and the acuity of our senses. And number two, it's based on things outside of our control. That's gratification. That's where attachments go. So we have to switch our consciousness from being attached to detachment. We do that by Daivi Varnashram. First, proper behavior. Recognizing the role of our seniors, of our mothers, protecting one another spiritually. We switch from the attached mentality to a detached mentality. The detached understanding is that that's gratification, that is what it is, but anandamaya abhyasat, aham dasosmi, by engaging, serving, developing relationship with Krishna, the happiness that dwells already within can go on in an unending way. Until we are fully, spiritually pure and liberated, until we come to the Pandita Samadarshana, where we see everything as Krishna's energy, parts and parcel of Krishna, we behave according to Varnashram, so that everyone around us are lifted up to the level where we can choose Krishna consciousness, while at the same time, Daivi, we perform our sadhana for the purification. Because Varnashram in and of itself is not nearly enough. Necessary while we're going through our purification, but it is not enough. Our sadhana is absolutely crucial. Second thing is understanding that all activities that do not lead to us coming out of samsara is a sinful activity. Whether it is so-called good or bad. Any activity, basically, that creates karma, good or bad, so-called good or bad karma, is a sinful activity. Because it takes the soul and puts the soul back into a material body. And back into millions of lifetimes into the animal kingdom and so on and so forth. Any activity that puts the soul back into samsara is a sinful activity. Good or bad. So what we must concentrate on, the story of King Nriga is a perfect example. King Nriga, we know he was giving out hundreds and thousands of cows to all the brahmanas. Charity. Wonderful charity. But as we know again from Bhagavad Gita, all activities have some fault, as fire is covered by smoke. We know in the story, one cow drifted off into one herd, and it was given again. Insignificant fault. But what happened? In the well is a lizard. There's more philosophy to that story to go along, but just to make the point. King Nriga, of course, got to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so at least on that hand, he was benefited by so much of his charity. But the point being, every activity, no matter how good it may seem on this level, we have to make sure the activities that we do, the charity that we do, has to address two things. The primary importance, and that is the soul. And everything that we do in helping another person is to help them begin their sadhana practice. Gokulananda Prabhu gave another example yesterday about the story of Hridayananda Maharaj. Did not say anything about chant your rounds, because that would push the person further away from Krishna. Ping pong was what Maharaj used to bring the person closer to Krishna. Now, what's very important is that Hridayananda Maharaj can do that. If someone invites me to a ping pong game, that's not a recommended way for me to try to pull them back. I go off into a ping pong tournament and get lost in that. But we can steer people. If I don't have the ability to deal with Prabhu, please go to Nityananda Prabhu. He knows how to bring this person closer to Krishna. I may not know how to do that. Remember, devotees, we are to give association to our juniors, not take association. If we're unable to give association and we fall into the association of that person, it's best we recognize that we're not suitable for that and guide them to another senior devotee. I have droned on enough. If there are any questions, comments, or corrections, we can discuss and move on. Yes. Hari Hari.
At the beginning of class, you were talking about how we cannot trust the information that is coming through our senses, right? The senses perceive the world, and you know, we can't trust the acuity of our senses, and what the senses are telling us are the sources of our happiness are not really the sources of our happiness, and our real happiness lies in understanding our relationship with Krishna, which is an internal cultivation. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about those who are in the process of sadhana bhakti. They haven't fully detached themselves from their senses, and they haven't fully awakened their internal relationship with Krishna. So then they may sometimes be thinking, oh, I'm feeling very happy. And they may think, oh, this is a sign of my internal awakening of my Krishna consciousness. But actually, we may still very much be on the sensory platform. Especially as in terms of devotee relationships, you know, we may be thinking that devotees should treat me a certain way and deal with me a certain way, because that's what's pleasing for my senses. And then we think, okay, if it's pleasing for my senses, it must be Krishna conscious. So how do we avoid that very dangerous misconception?
Wonderful class you gave yesterday. And I think you brought it up that some people say that I chant offenselessly. So I chant with offenses, so I'll stop chanting, so I don't chant with offenses. We know namaparada yuktanam. Even if you chant with offenses, continue to chant, and you'll gradually chant offenselessly. It's the same principle. You're absolutely correct. We have relationships where we don't recognize the difference between our activities, that we think that we're getting some pleasure from our activities, and we're misunderstanding, not quite sure, or assuming that this is a spiritual experience, or am I paraphrasing it to some extent? Prabhupada, there was a nice story. I don't know if it's in a Lila Amrita, but I heard it somewhere along the way. You can correct me if I'm wrong. In the beginning of ISKCON, there was some hippie came in, and they showed him how to chant, and he was chanting and chanting. He said, oh, I'm seeing colors and stars and lights and sounds, and Krishna's, you know, dancing. And Prabhupada said, that's okay, keep chanting and it'll go away. So we have some wonderful experience, and we think that it's because of our spiritual activity. It could be just because that's what we like doing. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar Devotion talks a lot about that. That's when you have bhakti mixed, Mishra Bhakti, mixed with karma, jnana, and all kinds of other wonderful things. It's still bhakti, but it's mixed with all kinds of silliness. By continuing to practice the bhakti process, you purify it. So all these mixtures that it's within our bhakti, we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're doing a particular service that I love technological things. So I was making a slideshow, and I was really getting into it. Was it my devotional service? I was making a slideshow for Krishna Janmashtami. Is it my making a slideshow for Krishna Janmashtami, or is it the fact that I like to deal with gizmos and deal with technology? That's secondary, and it's actually irrelevant. Because the fact that we're doing it for Krishna, that's why Varnashram is important. It's we're going to have, this is very important to understand, our bhakti is going to be Mishra. Unless we are Nitya Siddha, our bhakti is Mishra. It's going to be mixed with karma, jnana, and all other things, our personal desires. It's going to be mixed with that. That's okay for the beginning. That's why Varnashram, again, is so crucially important. Because at least if we're engaged in an activity that we like according to our qualities acquired from the three modes of material nature, which is Krishna talks, that's how he describes Varnashram in the fourth chapter. Varnashram activities, activities we've gotten according to the three modes of material nature. If we engage in that activity, making a slideshow, but making a slideshow of Krishna, now I could be thoroughly enjoying just the making the slideshow part, but because Krishna sees that I'm making a slideshow for his glorification, there's purification. So our bhakti is going to be Mishra. It is going to be, we can't get, don't worry about it. Just keep performing your bhakti yoga. Now there's another thing we'll come to that must be said. Keep performing our bhakti yoga, and by continuing to chant, we gradually chant offenselessly. By continuing our bhakti yoga, our bhakti yoga gradually becomes purified, where it doesn't matter what we do. I don't like to clean the ceiling. I'm laughing. In Gurukula, we lived in huts, and huts, they just attract spiders and cobwebs, so ceilings had to be cleaned every week. Hated it. That's why I have this love of cleaning ceilings. Hate cleaning ceilings. Once I'm purified of my likes and dislikes according to Triguna, the modes of material nature, I can clean the ceiling and become as happy and overjoyed as making a slideshow presentation. Because I'm not cleaning a ceiling, I'm serving Krishna. While there's Mishra, I'm cleaning a ceiling because my ashram teacher told me to do so, and if I don't, he's gonna make me water banana trees during soccer time. So I'm upset because I have to, but I'm doing it for my teacher, who in this was my spiritual master. In the Gurukula, the teacher is a spiritual master. So I'm doing it to follow instructions. That little bit of bhakti is purifying. Even though I'm grumbling, I'm growling, I don't like cleaning the ceilings, the fact that I surrender to the instruction of my teacher is giving me a little bit of purification. There's a saying, the world sees the result and not the intention. Krishna sees the intention and not the result. So what little bit of bhakti is there, that little bit of surrender of me cleaning the ceiling, Krishna accepts that, and there's purification. Do it again, there's more purification and more purification. But there's all kinds of Mishra. We're bringing millions of lifetimes of Mishra into our devotional service. That's okay for the time being. Again, we know in the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name is to continue to commit sinful activities on the strength of your bhakti yoga. Thinking, oh, I'm doing my bhakti yoga anyway, so I'm going to go out and, you know, do some silliness. And I'll come back to the temple and I'll jump up and down for Mangalarti, and all's forgiven. That's an offense. And that was that one thing I was going to talk about very briefly, because we're over time, is offenses derail. Once we commit offenses or continue to commit offenses, it's a whole different kettle of fish. Committing offenses has to stop. The four types of offenses, Vaishnava Aparad, Dham Aparad, Seva Aparad, Nam Aparad. We're going to commit offenses in the beginning, but we have to become aware of the offenses. We have to endeavor to eliminating offenses, because offenses derail our devotional process. Krishna does not put up with silliness that we deal in dealing with other devotees. Does not. Prabhu, you have your son, right? How would Prabhu feel if I mistreated his son? Don't even ask the question, right? Krishna does not appreciate us. And that's, again, why Varnashram is very important. Women protecting the men, recognizing that men are men, and men recognizing women and protecting women, seeing them as mother. It's in this chapter, and the following chapter, talks about the importance of women being an inspiration to the devotee. It's in, we may have already passed it, perhaps, I'm not sure, but it's in this section of the Bhagavatam when it talks about the importance, and one of Prabhupada's, a couple of Prabhupada's purports, it talks about the importance, because sometimes a lot of the translations talk about, oh, the women were attracted to the opposite sex, and it's, but according to the Varnashram understanding, according to proper understanding of what Prabhupada's getting to, it's our attachment to seeing women as sense objects that's the problem, and women seeing men as sense objects that's the problem, and not recognizing there is a positive, uplifting relationship men and women can have that raises both in Krishna consciousness, and offensive behavior towards one or the other is unacceptable. We won't go into offenses. So, there's bhakti. Our bhakti is mishra, mixed with all kinds of stupidity. That's okay. Under the guidance of the spiritual master in Varnashram, we continue. That's what the spiritual master does. The whole purpose of Gurukula is to train up the, and that's what Prabhupada established Gurukula for. My first spiritual master, Jagadish Maharaj, Prabhupada made him in charge of all Gurukulas in the early days. Prabhupada told him the purpose of Gurukula is to train all the children in Varnashram. That was the explicit purpose of Gurukula. Because you put the living entity in there according to their guna karma, according to their qualities acquired from the three modes of material nature, they act accordingly. And then you just have to add, a child likes to do a particular activity, just add, do it for Krishna. And then they're on their way. When you have people don't know what they're doing, oh, should I do this, should I do that, and you're trying to add Krishna at the same time, you get, purification is there. Purification is always there. Purification means we get another chance to try again in the next life. And another chance. Krishna doesn't give up on us. But we're trying to come to Krishna conscious Prema Bhakti as soon as possible. Why wait next life and the following life? Varnashram can help us, and the spiritual master engages us. It is so unfortunate that we do not have ashram gurukulas. Prabhu, we have to reestablish gurukulas. It's crucially important to establish gurukula, because that's where we are not pure devotees. We are not. And unless we know how to deal in this world as Vaishnavas with one another and with the world, Arjuna asks Krishna, how does he eat? How does he sit? How does he walk? That's Varnashram. Arjuna was asking, how does a pure devotee function in this world? That's Varnashram. It is so unfortunate that we as a society have largely failed with the Gurukula idea. It has to. It's crucial that we reestablish it for the sake of ISKCON. Crucial. Absolutely crucial. That way we have devotees who are properly situated in their ashram, in their grihastha life, in their brahminical activities, kshatriya activities, and so on. Vaishya and Shudra activities. People think Shudra is a bad thing. You read in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, you read the qualities of a Shudra, you take out, I think, two or three different things, and it sounds like, I think it's Narada Muni is describing this. Seventh canto? Thank you. Talk to Jagannath Prabhu. You take out one or two qualities of a Shudra, it sounds like he's describing a Brahmana. The thing is, one of the things he says, service to others or something like that, and you reckon, oh, that's a Shudra. But all the other qualities, it sounds like Narada Muni is, it's Narada Muni, right? It sounds like he's talking about a Brahmana. You see? Shudra is not some, you know, some person with walking around with their pants hanging down. A Shudra is a, if I could come up to the level of a Shudra, that's a good start for me. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam, a key.